You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to GameSense.AB.ca. To the show, Ty, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good as a Blue Jays fan. I got a little pep in my step right now after that news.
Well, Dylan Cease, we had a few people texting me. I don't really know who Dylan Cease is. And I'm like, well, you might want to. This guy is pretty much a guaranteed 200 strikeout pitcher, right? He's got, I think it's the last 5 years, he's had at least 200 strikeouts. And then, you know, the guy gives you lots of innings. He's been a pretty healthy pitcher. You know, he's been a Cy Young finalist a few times in his career, I think second and fourth, if it's not mistaken. Like, this is a big addition for the Jays. Essentially, his money, $30 million, you know, Scherzer was making 15. I think Bassett was making 12, if I'm not mistaken. So he's kind of basically covered off both of them.
Yeah, and another thing too, like, his ERA shot up last year, but I was digging into some of the metrics and reading a few people today. He had the 11th worst defense behind him out of any pitcher in Major League Baseball, like defensive performance, and they measure that with a whole bunch of things. But when you look at his fielding independent numbers, he's remarkably consistent every year. He's durable, he's consistent, and he's high velocity. He's like 88th percentile in velocity amongst starters. And the Jays didn't really have that up until Yesavage came up at the end, but now they got a fireballer who they can throw at the front of their rotation, and he's here for the next 7 years. So it's a great deal. And the thing I love too about baseball fans, you'll see people, oh, that's a lot of money. Who cares? Who cares if the Blue Jays are over the luxury tax? If they want to spend $210 million on Dylan Cease, it does not stop them from really doing anything else. I still think they can bring back Bo if they want to bring back Bo Bichette, for example.
Oh, 100%. I think they could. Do you think they will, though?
I think Kyle Tucker will be more expensive than Bo Bichette. Like, that seems to be kind of the common thing going around on baseball Twitter. So I think spending $210 on a pitcher maybe takes you out of the Kyle Tucker sweepstakes, but I've always believed that the smartest thing for Bo Bichette to do is to probably lock in or not lock into a contract, but go with one of those deals with a bunch of opt-outs in it, because listen, he'll probably get some offers in the $25 to $30 million range right now, or maybe $20 to $25 million range. But if he were to have a great season next year and the Jays go on another run and he stays healthy, I mean, maybe he opts out next winter and he gets more money than he could have this winter, right? So I wonder about a shorter term opt-out heavy deal with the Blue Jays. I think that makes sense for both sides.
Okay. The Edmonton Oilers last night, different opponent, different score, basically the same as the 9-1 loss. They were down 5-0 to Colorado. They're down 4-0 last night. Dallas had a goal called back, which was a clear high stick. But it was not a good start again for the Edmonton Oilers. It didn't get better as the game went along. Edmonton scored a few more goals than they did against Colorado, but that was really the only difference. And it's virtually the same issues that were there in November and have really been there all year long continued. You have unforced errors where guys aren't even being pressured. Guys who, like, how Leon Draisaitl missed out on that puck makes no sense to me. Ekholm, same thing. Ekholm loses a battle, him and Bouchard, you know, right behind the net where that shouldn't happen, right? You got errant passes, you know, losing battles all over. Like, it's goaltending. Yeah, I didn't like Skinner on that, on when he made the nice save and then put himself way out of position on the second goal. I didn't like it. But it's funny, goaltending, I don't even think I would put in the top four problems. It's been a problem, but they got lots of other problems. And I don't, they got to maybe get a checklist and try to just start with one and say, okay, let's eliminate this problem. Okay, now then let's eliminate that. I don't see a quick fix coming here for this team.
No, and at the top of that checklist for me, I think a lot of fans would probably agree with me on this. How about getting some of those effort mistakes out of your game? Like, I look at what happened on goals 3 and 4 yesterday, and goal 3, I mean, a dumb change when, again, you never, Gregor, you probably teach the kids you coach in peewee hockey that, like, you don't change when you're on the back check. That is the wrong time to go for a line change. So it's a bad change. And then there's Leon Draisaitl, who's supposed to be one of your leaders, who someone at the beginning of the season came out and said he wants to work his way into the Selke conversation one day. He has 2 feet on the center ice line, and he basically doesn't move. Connor McDavid is coming off an offensive zone chance on the other end, and he gets back into the zone quicker than Leon Draisaitl does on that goal. So that drove me nuts there. Again, it's effort-based, right? It's a lot of hoping, and Draisaitl stands still going, ah, maybe Kulak can punch this through the two guys he's battling with, and then I might have a rush the other way. That's not how this team can be playing. And even the fourth goal, Connor McDavid comes into the zone, and is it a bad read? Is it not wanting to engage a guy physically? I don't know, but he doesn't take his man. It leaves Ekholm in no man's land trying to defend a guy. Like, everything is awkward. Everything is clunky. And a lot of these mistakes feel a little bit effort-based. And it starts at the top. Like, I can go on and on about Mangiapane and Frederick not really looking like they're two guys who are going to be able to help you come playoff time. But the fact that we can sit and point to two goals last night in the first period when the game was still relatively in reach, and it's like effort, execution, I don't know, focus plays from Drysdale and McDavid that end up costing them two goals. I think goaltending is a problem. I think a whole bunch of things are a problem. But I think a lot of fans would be less upset with this team if they weren't seeing these effort-based mistakes.
Well, yeah, effort-based, you know, lack of energy-based. There's a focus, variety of things, right? Like focus, it's many, many different things. So I look at the Oilers and I don't know where, like, they have to look internally, right? Like, you can tell the frustration. You heard it on McDavid and Draisaitl last night. That, you know, I don't even know if they know where to look. You know what? Maybe they need to go on a team bender or something. I don't know what it is. You know, go to an axe throwing competition, do something. But what they're doing hasn't worked. And I get that they're confident that they feel they can get out of it. But right now, they're not doing the work to get out of it.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, right? There were a couple of goals last night that, again, just effort-based, wanting to win a 50-50 battle. The other team seems to have that extra couple of percentage points in their game that seemed to be the difference. So, I don't know. You look back on that road trip, frustrating that it feels like you're starting to maybe build up some momentum, especially, and we can loop goaltending into this part of the conversation. Calvin Pickard is excellent against Tampa Bay. He is the sole reason you were able to get a point in that hockey game. And Stuart Skinner, even though he gave up three, he was tremendous against the Florida Panthers, and the team had so much fight in that game against Florida. And it's like, all right, the goalies are each coming off of good performances. The team was more engaged in that game on Saturday against Florida than I think they've been in any game so far this season. And you're thinking, you're back on home ice. That should rejuvenate a team that has been traditionally dominant at Rogers Place over the last 3 years. They're fifth, I believe, in home points percentage in the last three regular seasons. All of that should have been a perfect storm for them to blow out the Dallas Stars. Add on the fact Rantanen's not there. Add on the fact that Thomas Harley's not in the lineup. Like, if any team was going to win that game 8-3 going into it, I would have put all my money on it being the Oilers winning that game 8-3. And the fact they came up that flat, it's inexcusable. And I get what Matthias Ekholm said before, where he was like, you have to, you know, understand that we've played a lot of hockey. He used different verbiage, but he was, you have to understand we've played a lot of hockey. And I get that we can use that as an excuse through training camp, through 10 games. We're 30% done the season. At what point are you going to stop sitting in the room if you're one of these leaders and just going, we've played a lot of hockey? Like, at some point, you need to figure it out and do some of these effort-based things a little bit different.
Yeah, well, I look at it, the Oilers. I think Kapanen and Nugent Hopkins are going to be very close to returning. And I look at the salary cap. You can make it work. You bring them both on. But you got to send Tomasic down because of, you know, the cap space. Now, you could send someone else down who makes more, but he doesn't require waivers. So, you know, it's the simple move to make. But the bigger question is then, Kapanen and Nugent Hopkins come in the lineup. Tomasic comes out. I'm not taking Klattenberg out of the lineup. No chance. Like, he's played well. He scored a goal. He had more energy. I don't care about seniority or anything. You're the coach. You got to play the guys who are going to give you your energy. So it comes down to, and it's probably Mangiapane or Frederick. One of those two will come out of the lineup.
I'm 100% with you, and I get that Frederick was hurt last game. That's why his minutes were a little bit lower. Andrew Mangiapane played under 10 minutes. That's a message you can send to the locker room and say, hey, look, we have Connor Klattenberg, who was a middle six forward in junior, who played 15 games for Bakersfield, and he is outperforming the guy who we lined up to sign on July 1st. I think if you want to send a message, if you're Chris Knobloch, you are totally justified in doing that. And when the news broke that Klattenberg was coming up, you know, I kind of chuckled. I was like, all right, they know they need some energy, but you know, he's been a fighter in Bakersfield. He only has the 2 points. I talked with Ryan Holt, I think, last Wednesday, and he kind of said, like, on the list of guys who are ready to come up to the NHL in terms of their games, he said Klattenberg is a few rungs down from the Jarventis and the Quinn Hudsons on that team. So I kind of looked at it like, okay, the team's doing something a little bit cheeky here to try and get some energy. But the way he played against Dallas, there is no shot you can sit there if you're this coaching staff and say you are serious about icing the best roster with the 12 best forwards and have it not include Connor Klattenberg for that game on Saturday, which is an insane thing to say considering who Connor Klattenberg is. Like, the fact he's coming in and eating some of these veterans' lunch, it's wild.
Well, it just shows you, man, if you play with – well, right now on a team that's lacking, he's bringing something that stands out. And I know I'll say other guys might look more skilled, But Clattenburg wills you to get in the game every time. That's what he's doing. And, oh, by the way, he has now played, if I count his preseason games, I think he has 3 goals in 5 games in the NHL this year. So guess what? He figures out how to score. And no one's even expecting him to score. But he figures out how to do it. So I give him a boatload of credit. I give him a ton of credit. He was physical. He's not changed just because he got his goal. It wasn't like he's like, hey, you know what? I'm not going to be a goal scorer. No, he was running around. He was doing everything that you wanted him to do. He just happened to produce a goal. And, hey, nice set of hands. Picks the rebound backhand. Goes to the forehand. But, man, he is – a lot of other guys could grab a clue from how he is playing right now and just say, hey, just work hard.
Yeah, totally. Liam and I always love to joke that in Edmonton, it's the easiest market in the world to become a fan favorite. Because if you go and hit hard and go to the net and have a big grin on your face, this fan base is going to absolutely love you. The other thing I liked about that goal, there were 3 blue sweaters parked real close to the blue paint, and a good thing happened. And I've been harping on this for a while. I don't think they create nearly enough traffic and chaos in front of the net, and it's Liam's project for our show tomorrow. He's going through every goal on Instat, and he's going to see how many goals the Oilers have scored this year with at least 3 bodies within a 4-foot radius of the blue paint. I bet you it is not very many.
It's the easiest bet of my life. What odds you give me on that one? Yeah.
Take the under.
The under. Tough start for the Flames tonight as Wolf just got pulled. They are losing 3-0 in Tampa Bay, and it looks like the Lightning scored 3 goals on 5 shots. So, that's probably what the Flames want. But in the big picture, but they're going to have nights like that for sure. Looking at trade opportunities. Hey, it's a hot topic. It's a fun thing to do if you look at it. I like to look at ones that are more realistic. And I know a lot of people like Binnington. His name came out there, Jordan Binnington. I'm like, okay, he's making $6 million. Right now, there's only one goalie in the league who has a worse goal save above expected than Binnington. Now, and that's not save percentage. That's not, you know, him getting, you know, fleeced by great chances. They base that off of how many goals should a guy, these are saves that the average goalie would make. And he's minus 10. He's 74th out of 75th. He makes $6 million. So to me, he's a $6 million question mark. Well, Stuart Skinner's a $2.6 million question mark. If you want to trade him straight up and St. Louis eats half of Binnington's salary, I could see that trade. Now, I don't see why St. Louis would do that, but I could see it. But I don't know if I'm trading I wouldn't trade Binnington for Skinner and just absorb the $3.4 million because now I got to make other moves to weaken the rest of my lineup.
Yeah, the one name, I'm sure you saw it, Kevin Weeks throw at the Tristan Jarry thing a couple of hours ago, and Friedman in his most recent 32 thoughts had a line about, one, Stuart Skinner potentially not finishing the year in Edmonton, and then he had another line about how Pittsburgh is open for business when it comes to goaltending. He's got term, and that scares the living daylights out of me, but if you're Pittsburgh and you have Shelovs and you're liking what you're seeing in Adam Murashov and Blomqvist is there, he played games for him last year. I mean, I'm not saying I would do this, but Tristan Jarry at 50% retained is basically the same cap hit as Stuart Skinner. If they're looking to do something that they don't view as a true upgrade and just want to do a lateral move for the sake of seeing if anyone with a change of scenery can benefit from being in Edmonton, Tristan Jarry fits that description. And again, 50% retained, it would make sense for Pittsburgh to do it because it's way better than them buying him out in the summer.
Yeah. Now, Jarry was just activated today. He hasn't played a game since getting injured on November 3rd. So now prior to that, he had played well. He made 7 appearances this year. And you know what? Was solid for the Penguins. So a much better start to his season than what he had last year. I think he was 5-2 and he had a save percentage. He was above 920, I think, in 4 of his his 7 starts. So, it looks good. If you retain half, then yeah, that's one that I could see, and if Skinner's going the other way, it's funny enough, an oil king for an Edmontonian, funny enough. So we'll see. There's options out there. I still think if I'm Edmonton, if you think Skinner's a question mark, I think it's valid to state that at this point. It's totally valid. But if you get rid of Skinner for another question mark, I'm not sure you're improving your team. You'd be better off to bring in another question mark to challenge Skinner. Would you not?
I agree with you 100%. And there's another name that I kind of kicked around today. That's intriguing to me, although he is a big-time question mark. But there was a report yesterday, a really good story by Ben Pope in the Chicago Sun-Times about what's been going on behind the scenes with Laurent Brossoit and his knee injury and everything that went into it. He had so many injuries. He hasn't played hockey in like 18 months, but they found something and they eventually figured out the issue. It wasn't like a cyst, but it was something in his hip that was grinding down the cartilage in his hip. And they finally figured that out and were able to address it in one surgery. And they think that's what was giving him knee problems and all these other issues. So it's fixed. And Ben Pope says he's maybe ready to be playing games in the American League in the next couple of weeks here. And Chicago is pretty set between the pipes. They have Spencer Knight and they have Arvid Soderblom. So what Ben Pope ends his piece by saying is it's difficult to predict, but after a stint, maybe it's a trade for Laurent Brossoit. He's $3.3 million this year. Hasn't played hockey in a year and a half, but last time he did play hockey, he was really good. He had save percentages in the 920 range in back-to-back years. Not a guy who I think you can trust to play 55 games for you in a season or anything like that. But if you're Edmonton and you try the Ingram thing maybe some point in December and that doesn't work, maybe you get to the end of December and it's like, hey, it would make a ton of sense for Chicago to keep 50% of that deal because it's better for them financially and cap-wise than burying him in the minors. $1.75 million for Laurent Brossoit, maybe a bullet worth shooting.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Stan Bowman, this is why you're paid to be a GM. The next few weeks will be something to see. Now, you read the pulse of your team. And, you know, I know Frank had that report about all the, you know, the players. I don't know if it was so much that they said, you know, don't send a picker down. It was more so my understanding is it kind of went to bat, say, hey, it's not his fault. Solely, the team hasn't played very well. Because Pickard himself said before the Tampa game, I got to play better, right? He basically said, he goes, I needed a good game. He knew what was at stake. And, you know, his style is very unique. It kind of is what he is. I think it's probably the easier upgrade to make, or at least attempt to make, and see if your defensive zone play can improve, then, you know, maybe the rest of your goaltending numbers will get better. I still think there's areas of Skinner's game, no question, that have to improve, and maybe they'll never improve here. I don't know. I talk to Woodley often enough to know that I think there's some concerns in mobility for sure. That's a fair statement. And Woodley's also said he's seen some changes that they've made in his game that he thinks will work. They don't work right away. Like, it takes a while to get comfortable in implementing them. I just don't know if they have the patience to see those come to fruition in Edmonton.
Yeah, and again, if this is the end of the line at some point this season for Stuart Skinner, I think it's fair if you're an Oilers fan to like feel a little bit sad about that. This is a homegrown guy who showed so much promise early on, but like goaltending is so mental. I talked to Dubnyk today, and he kind of said like you just eventually get to a point where if you're a goalie, you feel like you're stuck in the mud a little bit. And Dubé obviously got to that point here in Edmonton, and he's like, if you don't feel like you're supported by the organization, whatever level that is, and I'm not saying this is the case for Skinner, this was Dubnyk talking about his experience, but he's like, it's really, really hard to not let bad things snowball when you feel like there's people in the organization kind of being like, can't wait to get this guy out of here. So again, I feel for Stuart Skinner right now. I'm hoping that with a little bit of time, he can find some form here, but I just wonder how much time this organization is going to give him.
Ty, great stuff, buddy. We will chat with you next week. Have a good one.
Sounds good to you, Griggs.
There you go.